had this concept of the all-day Torahthon. It's one of those things that that sound great, you know, in a meeting somewhere in someone's room, but the fact that it would actually come to reality and that people would come and participate, so we were sort of far less confident in this. For everyone who's come today to so many shiurim, it really is very, very meaningful and speaks so highly of the Talmidim and Talmidot that we have in Yeshiva University. I want to do something perhaps today that's a little different than other shiurim you've been to today or other times. You know, normally you go to a shiur, so a shiur's about a topic. First, I really want to thank Jacob before you leave. Jacob Bernstein, who's the president of SOI, who has done this full-time plus, besides being a student and in smicha, really works tirelessly for the institution. So Jacob, thank you so much, and to Nathan as well. Okay, so normally you give a shiur about a topic, and I thought that instead of giving a shiur about Rav Kook or about Or HaTeshuvah, that seeing the lead-in today into Aseres Mei Tshuva, we'd really just learn some of the works of Rav Kook, some of the works of Or HaTeshuvah, instead of sort of being about it, just to give all of you, perhaps, who have not had a chance to be exposed to Rav Kook, just a little bit of a sense of his writings, of his language, of his feeling, of the emotion, of the experience. And that's what I really want to spend the bulk of this year doing. We're going to end a little bit early, before 6 o'clock, but up until that point. Before we delve into the Sefer, by the way, before we move forward, has anybody here learned Or HaTeshuvah before? Okay. Anybody learned other Rav Kook's writings before? So, the truth is, Or HaTeshuvah is actually considered to be his, I guess, most famous, it's the most widely read. Part of that is because, which I'll describe in a second, he actually wrote a lot of the chapters himself, which is different than some of the other Sfarim. There's a little bit of a backdrop to Or HaTeshuvah. And to me, what's so meaningful about the Sefer, besides the actual ideas that he expresses, is the fact that the Sefer at once really was of a certain time. It was meaningful for when it was written. It's also something that is absolutely universal, absolutely eternal. What I mean when I say that it was of that time, it was meaningful for the period it was written in. Anybody know, by the way, it'd be boring if I just sit here talking. Anybody know when Or HaTeshuvah was written? Anybody know when Rav Kook lived? I'm sure everyone knows basically when he lived. Anybody know the dates of his life, when he lived? Akiva, if you know, if you didn't get this, copies floating around. So he was born in 1867. He was considered to be a real prodigy. He learned in the great Lithuanian yeshivas. He learned in Volozhin for 2 years. The Nitziv said about Rav Kook, Rav Kook went to Volozhin when he was 18. The Nitziv said about Rav Kook that if they had opened yeshivas Volozhin just to have Rav Kook there for 2 years, it would have been worth it to have the entire yeshivas Volozhin. Which tells you a little bit about Rav Kook, tells you a little bit about the Nitziv. Rav Kook, even when he was in Europe, he had this incredibly strong passion to go to Eretz Yisrael. He emigrated to Eretz Yisrael in 1904, and he became the Rav in Yafo, even at a very early age. And he started writing on Or HaTeshuvah before World War I. He was writing it in Yafo. World War I, he ended up leaving Israel for various reasons. He ended up in Switzerland and in England. He spent the entire war in Europe, and then came back after the war in 1920. I imagine a lot of you know the sort of complicated circumstances under which he returned back to Israel, the issue about where he'd be the rabbi in Yafo, the rabbi in Yerushalayim, the chief rabbi, if you would sort of want to take a few-year period of, I don't want to speak poorly about Jews, but sort of the complexity of Hashkafa in Eretz Yisrael. So really those years, 1920 to 1925, really became a battleground from which we probably still have not recovered 90 years later. And he finished writing Or HaTeshuvah then. Now, during that period of time, that Rav Kook was so involved in the future vision of the state of Israel. Obviously, up until that point, the Chalutzim had come. The Chalutzim were not only not from, but they were often anti-religious, and they were building up the country. And many of the old guard, the Yishuv HaYashan, the old immigrants to Eretz Yisrael, the old Jews in Eretz Yisrael, they viewed, and maybe you understand their perspective, as the Chalutzim of being just the absolute worst thing that could have happened to the land of Israel. Here are your people coming here that are anti-religious. They want to build a state that not only has nothing to do with religion, but is against religion. And the perspective of the Yishuv HaYashan was almost across the board to oppose the Chalutzim had come. And Rav Kook had a totally different perspective. Rav Kook had a perspective that, and again, it's much more complicated than I can describe in a few sentences, but that the vibrancy of the Chalutzim, the vibrancy of the settlers, the vibrancy of this movement, really, if it was utilized properly, if the sparks of those Chalutzim could be encapsulated and elevated, tapped into, then this really was the beginning of a sort of messianic revival. If we could just take the vitality of the Chalutzim, this movement of great passion, and somehow we could elevate it, and we could, again, as Rav Kook always said, we could tap into the sparks of what exists in the world. And Rav Kook felt that was the ideal way of ushering in a new era. And for Rav Kook, everything was about optimism. Everything was always about seeing the best. And we'll see in some of his writings. Everything was about identifying Kedusha. That's in a person, that's in a subject matter. People may know very famously that Rav Kook was involved in the opening of the Hebrew University, which became another gigantic source of controversy, which maybe we'll discuss at another time. And Rav Kook felt that material in the world, science, literature, art, that there are sparks there, and the role of man is not to run from it, the role of man was not to hide from it, but the role of man was to elevate the sparks that are in the world. And Arot HaTshuva very much goes to that project. That Rav Kook felt that with all the movements in the world, communism, socialism, Zionism, that the role of the, I guess, Orthodox community was to create a framework where there was holiness in that process. Create a framework where people who were perhaps not connected, the Zionists were not connected, they would be tempted to see what they were doing in an elevated way, in a beautiful way, in a holy way. And Arot HaTshuva was about trying to send out a message, trying to present the message, trying to come up with an idea of return that would attract and elevate the entire sort of world during this process of coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And in that vein, Rav Kook felt that perhaps the old way of encouraging tshuva was not going to work. If I ask you, what's your image of like a mussar shmooze, of a tshuva, of a shmooze about return? What would be like your first image about that? Now, it's probably not an accurate image because the mussar movement was a very psychologically informed educational movement. It wasn't very harif. But your first image might be of a mussar shmooze about return. Fire and brimstone. Which really, you know, is not necessarily sort of, I mean, definitely not fire and brimstone per se. That's somehow we have images that we have sort of adopted from the Christian world of what sort of awaits us in the next world. It's definitely not fire and brimstone, but that sort of becomes like the image of the next world, the image of somebody breaking a shtender during a mussar shmooze, the image of, you know, if you speak to people that go through, I'm not denigrating at all the yeshivish world, but the sort of, you know, very yeshivish places, and now they sort of have moved away from there, the word mashkiach is like a curse word. Because mashkiach was the guy that was sort of like dragging you to bed in the morning, and he was making you feel bad, and he was making you feel guilty, and he was threatening to throw out of yeshiva. The mashkiach was not viewed as like this holy, sainted figure. And Rav Kook really wanted to change the tone of what tshuva would be. It would be about embracing, elevating, connecting, going back to your roots. It would be something that could touch the entire world and elevate the entire world. But just as a contrast, if we think perhaps one of the most formidable figures in the 19th century as far as Hasidus or the Jewish world, you think about Kotzk, right? And what was Kotzk in a word? What was sort of Kotzk trying to accomplish in a word? It was all about emes. Now, it's very hard to live in this world and to be married and to live with yourself and also be a total ish emes, because, you know, we're sort of very human, we're very inadequate. So So MS would mean sort of having to strip away everything, almost like, you know, pound yourself into oblivion, just negate sort of everything around you, literally come to Kutsk and leave your wife and your children behind. I mean, the Kutsk Rebbe was not, you know, very popular among the, you know, the women and children, and just sort of strip yourself of everything, and just, and Rav Kook was sort of almost the reverse. You know, strip yourself of everything, but as a way of returning back to yourself in the most gentle, in the most beautiful, in the most touching, in the most elevating types of ways. Now, that's what I mean when I say the Rav Kook was of a time period, because he really was writing something that was eternal, but he was also very focused on what his sort of task was at hand in 1914, 1920, 1921, etc. And by the way, Arot HaTshuva was published in 1925 by his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. Let me say a word about that, and one more word why Arot HaTshuva is so eternal. General Rav Kook, I don't know if you know anybody like this, there's actually somebody in this room, and he knows who he is, who's a little bit like this, that Rav Kook really was not a person that was organized in a methodology. He opened a yeshiva, Merkaz Rav Kook, which closed like during his lifetime. People didn't really come. He didn't really have like a movement. He didn't have like a political party. In fact, he was very apolitical in a lot of ways. He didn't have like svarim that he put out. I mean, now Rav Kook, it's almost like there's a community that's built sort of like, in many ways, part of the Lulav Zayis community around Rav Kook. That was not true by Rav Kook. Rav Kook was like a saintly figure who was involved in definitely things around him. He lived the most simple of lives. He lived on like a mattress, and he had like a wooden table, and that was it. That's all he ever had his whole life. He never had money. He never had food. He lived the most simple of lives. And there wasn't like a movement built around Rav Kook. When Rav Kook was nifter, and even during his life a little bit, the people are interested in this topic. Rabbi Yehuda Mirsky just came out with a book that was translated recently about this issue. Rav Tzvi Yehuda, his son, decided to sort of publish a lot of the Svarim. It was him that sort of built up the movement, and the yeshiva sort of made Rav Kook someone that could speak to generations afterwards. It really was not Rav Kook himself. It was almost, if you think about sort of the rise of Hasidus, not as stark as this. You know, who was the Baal Shem Tov? Like, what did he write? Like, what did he do? Where did he live? Like, We know very little. There was very little that was sort of, and he organized very little, and he sort of needed the Magid of Mizrich to create the movement of Hasidus, and the Baal Shem Tov is really the spirit behind that Hasidus, and sort of the same is true as well by a lot of these things. So what Rav Kook did, and I mentioned that there are people in this room who might be like this, he would go around wherever he was with a notebook. And he would just write down sort of thoughts of inspiration as they came to him, almost like prophetic thoughts as they came to him, elevated thoughts. And he had like notebook, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these notebooks. He never really wrote into a sefer. And then later in his life, both his son, Ritzvi Yehuda, as well as the Nazir of Dov Kohn, so they sort of took the work and they put it into a rote, or a rote HaKodesh, or a rote HaTshuva, or all the various things that was done by, again, by his son and by his pupil. The one small exception is a rote HaTshuva. The first three prakim, some of which we're going to learn today, was actually written and organized by Rav Kook himself. And last, as I said, that a rote HaTshuva is really an eternal work. Rav Kook, even if he doesn't always explained this way, is writing in a very autobiographical fashion about life as a feeling Jew, life as a Jew who experiences, life as a Jew who struggles. You read through his words, you know this is very much him speaking about himself and speaking about life. And Rav Kook felt is that not enough of the Svarim that you would open up really speak to the experience of what it means, what hate feels like, what tshuva feels like, what connection feels like. And so these svarim are really him speaking about himself and his struggles, what it means to often serve yechozer b'tshuva. And in that sense, there's really sort of like a timeless quality to it. Okay, what I want to do is, I want to go through the first three prakim today, v'rot ha'tshuva. I asked all of you again just to sort of read through together. I mean, this reading is a little bit on the dry side, but I asked certainly for any questions, any need for review. Anyone knows that Cook's language is somewhat esoteric. He made up a lot of words. He made up a lot of expressions. He sort of has his own type of like language. If he wanted to convey a feeling, you know, even if there was no sort of word, he'd almost like create words a little bit that created that feeling. But anybody have any insight or any thoughts? Certainly feel free to raise them, and we'll try to really understand these first three four prakim together. Okay, Rav Kook describes in Perek Aleph the three different motivations for doing tshuva. Right, tshuva tivit. How would you describe tshuva tivit? Anybody? What would you say that is? Natural tshuva, tshuva emunit, tshuva that is motivated by emuna, and tshuva sichlit, tshuva that is motivated by the seichel. Without seeing anything inside yet, which of these three would you assume Rav Kook was most drawn to? Tshuva motivated by teva, by natural impulse? Tshuva motivated by emuna, belief in the koch of tshuva? Or tshuva motivated by the seichel? Okay, so Jonah assumes number one, and we'll see in a second whether or not Jonah is right. Okay, so etat tshuva anamotziim, normally I speak Ashkenazis, but it's hard to imagine reading Rav Kook in Ashkenazis. It sort of like butchers the language, so we'll go against form and read in some type of weird Israeli accent of a Havras Vardit. So etat tshuva anamotziim b'sholosh marachot. There are three different basic layouts of tshuva, tshuva tivit, emunit, and tshuva sichlit. Okay, but tshuva ha-tivit, yeshnei chalakim. This first aspect of tshuva that is motivated by natural forces, there's really two different pieces to that. Tshuva tivit gufanit, which already is a mouthful, right? The tshuva tivit nafshit. Tshuva that is motivated by natural forces of the body, and tshuva that's motivated by natural forces of the soul. Now, Gabe, I want to tell me perhaps what that first category might be. What do you think tshuva tivit gufanit? Tshuva that is motivated by natural forces of the body. What does that mean? Akiva, what do you think?
Physical health.
Physical health. Okay. Anybody, Dov, what do you think?
Yisirin.
What's that?
Yisirin.
Okay. He wouldn't use that word necessarily, but David's certainly on the right path. So why don't we just sort of do the first few lines of this first paragraph, just so we can sort of see as much as possible in the next half an hour. Hagufanit sovevet kol haverot neged chukei hateva. The tshuva that is motivated by natural impulses based on the body, right, is sovevet kol haverot neged chukei hateva. A person does haverot which are against chukei hateva, which are against the laws of nature. Okay, and we'll see what he means in a few sentences. Hamusar v'hatorah hamikusharim im chukei hateva. The musar, which is self-improvement, Torah, mikusharim im chukei hateva, which are connected to the laws of nature. Anybody know what that means? Right? Ideas of musar, of Torah, that are connected somehow to chukei hateva. Okay, shesof kol hanhaga ra'ah hu lahavi machalot machovim. What does that mean? Shesof kol hanhaga ra'ah hu lahavi machalot machovim. Anybody?
Yeah. Every bad action, every bad impulse is going to have some negative impact, and it's in the best interest of man to really work on himself, really
begin with. Right. Right. So David's saying, or Rav Kook is saying, is an amazing idea. May a person who feels that they're not in the place they want to be spiritually, a person who does not keep the Torah, a person who goes against the laws of Torah Musar, so he himself experiences machalot machovim. There is a physical response. There's a physical reaction to sin. Everyone hears that, you believe it, something that you would agree with. I mean, do we feel physically different? Do we feel that they're machalot machovim based on chait? Yeah,
I guess, concrete sense, if you're not maintaining a healthy lifestyle, I mean, that's also...
Right, but that may be a little different. You know, that's sort of health. You know, you might be keeping every mitzvah, but you are overweight and not exercising. Rav Kook is saying even more than that. So Rav Kook is saying that a person that violates the Torah is going to have an impact on him physically. He's not going to be able to sleep. He's going to be depressed. He may lose weight. He may gain weight. He's not going to feel himself. He's going to be low energy. And it's that sort of physical change in him that motivates a person to do tshuva. I don't feel good. You know, I'm depressed. I'm low energy. And therefore, it's that which motivates the tshuva. Okay? So let's just even do one more line of this. The harbe sova mizeh ha'adam ha'prati v'ha'klali. Many people, both singular and plural, they suffer from this. They experience this.
V'acharei habirur, after the conclusion, shemitbarer etzlo davar, shehu ba'atzmo banhagato hara'a, asham hu b'chol oto dildul chayim shebalo, that I'm responsible, everybody know what those words are? Dildul hachayim shebalo. I'm responsible for the weakening of my life. After he realized that, haru some leiv l'takein ha'matzav. So I say, you know what, I'm going to do tshuva. I want to feel better. I want to eat better. I want to be healthier. I want to sleep better. I want to be less depressed. So I'm going to do tshuva. Now, how would you sort of describe that tshuva? As far as being something which is on a high level, a low level, what do you say? What's that?
Pretty low.
What's that? It's like the lowest level. It's even worse than tshuva mihira. It's like the person who sort of, you know, goes to the doctor and they weigh 600 pounds and eventually, okay, fine, I have to exercise. But what happened the first 600 pounds? Okay, forget that. But in other words, it's sort of like motivated by almost like the lowest common denominator, namely a person's health, depression, whatever the case is, and then the person gets moved based on that. Okay, that's sort of the lowest possible level of tshuva. So next paragraph. So yoter panimi he atshuva hativit hanafshit aruchanit. Sort of even more. How would you define that yoter panimit? Even more internal, even more real, more close to a person is the tshuva, natural tshuva, which is motivated by the nefesh. Motivated by the soul, humashikorim. This is what you would call musar klayot.
Guilt.
What's that?
Guilt.
Well, guilt is like a sort of a low-level word. You know, when we sort of feel moved by davening, when we feel moved to yeshuva, when there's something inside of us that yells out, you know, that's not really guilt. That's like basically what you would call the musar klayot is like the feelings of the kishkas, the feelings of the kidneys, the inner. What's that?
Kidneys.
Yeah, it's really the kidneys. It's like, you know, inwardly, we feel we want to sort of go higher than we are. And that's, again, it's based on teva. Like, naturally, a person just feels, you know, they yearn for more than that. Teva ha-nefesh ha-noshit hu lalechet b'derech yishara. Now, by the way, again, this is a very optimistic view on humanity. The nature of man is to go in a straight road. Now, if you live for long enough, and you struggle for long enough, sometimes you wonder about the truthfulness of the statement, but we believe it, Rav Kook believed it. It's the nature of man to want to go to Derech Yishara. Ugishasar min haderech, when a person sort of deviates from that road, kisha nafal b'chet, when he falls in sin, im nafsho adayin lo nishchata legamrei. And I think we know exactly what it means. Assuming there's still a spark, assuming that the nefesh has not been nishchata legamrei, how would you translate that, nishchata legamrei? Completely, what's that?
Slaughtered.
Completely slaughtered, completely destroyed. Hari hachush hazeh shel hayashrut. This chush, this feeling of wanting to be straight, of wanting to be close to God, madiv et levavo, it moves the heart. Hu mitmogeg mikav. I'm not even sure if this is a real word, but it sounds good. What's mitmogeg? Anybody, what's that? He exactly. He pulsates. Wow, that's very good one. The DRS education is a mitmogeg mikav. Like you're pulsating, sort of in pain of not being where you want to be. But who mizdareis lashuv l'takein et hamaveit? And then you're motivated to fix that which has been askew. Ad asher yargish kinimchechado. Until you feel it's gone. I'm a new man, etc. etc. Okay. By the way, just take a look at this next line. I wasn't sure what he meant the first time I learned this. Maybe you'll tell me. Chelek zeh shel tshuva hu misubach harbe ma'od. This part of tshuva, motivated by natural impulse, is very misubach. What does misubach mean? It's very confusing. Taloi hu b'tnaim rabim pnimiyim v'chitzonim. It's dependent on many different factors, externally and internally. V'yesh bo kama darchei hata'a. There are many ways that a person can sort of get messed up because of the natural impulse. Shechova hil hishamer mehem. You have to sort of guard against the natural impulse. Avam mikomakum hu echad yisodot. But still, this is like a fundamental idea. Shetochen ha-tshuva nishan aleihem. The tshuva rests on this. Now, why do you think of Cook is sort of throwing this in? That this natural impulse for tshuva and for change and close to Hashem Baruch Hu is like a treacherous slope, that it's often dangerous, that this is very complicated. Like, what's so complicated about it? I feel I want to be better, I want to be better. Yeah, Ben?
Along the lines of this natural, this feeling that everything has kedush to it, so any drive that a person has inherently is kadosh to it. So his drive, there is a natural drive to do tshuva, but without any guidance, and it's just based
right
on our own selves,
so
we don't trust ourselves.
Right. So Ben says absolutely right. You know, sometimes the natural impulse is the most beautiful impulse, but it's often the impulse you want to trust the least. You know, and all of a sudden the natural impulse is telling you, you know what, maybe I should, I don't know, like leave my house, go to the mirror for 20 years. Like, there's all sorts of things that the natural impulse, which may not be the worst thing in the world, but there's all sorts of ways that the natural impulse leads a person that may not be motivated by healthiness, it may not be healthy for a person's life. And that's why he says that as beautiful as that natural impulse is, you know, he's shamer. You have to sort of be careful a little bit sometimes about that natural impulse. Anybody want to add anything to that? Anybody, there's a hand up before? Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily lead to actual change. It might just be something that you're inspired for and fine. You'll go for it for a little bit, but it's not necessarily going to last.
Right, exactly. And that's part of it also. I'm not sure if that's what he meant. It sounds like that the motivation itself can be either impure or crooked, or but the reality, guys, what you're saying is also true. If a tshuva is motivated by impulse, you know, you have to sort of, that's the person you worry about the next day and the next week and the next everything else. But clearly, as far as like a value and a religious value, definitely it's there. Okay, yeah, Kiva.
I was going to say, I guess regret is telling you that it's pushing towards spirituality. It doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the proper derech.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the truth is, and this is something that Cook was miyaches to also, sometimes that push can be out of depression. I'm not saying that's the wrong push. There's all sorts of things that can motivate sort of religious change. And a person sort of has to think to themselves, you know, are there anything unhealthy that's sort of an undercurrent of that? And that's clearly something that Cook talks about a lot, sort of, you know, a lot of these types of things. Okay. Fine. So the next level, so acharei ha-tshuva tivit ba-ha-munit, after this sort of natural tshuva, and Joe, not to make you feel bad, but already we see that this natural impulse does not rank the highest, meaning the lowest is motivated by the body, the second to lowest is motivated by the soul, the third is going to be emunit, and the highest is going to be siklit. So acharei ha-tshuva tivit ba-ha-munit, after this tshuva, which comes from the teva, comes tshuva that's based on belief. Now, what does that mean? Before we read further, what does it mean, tshuva that's based on emunah? What do you think it means?
Religion.
Based on religion, but he really says, that a person sort of believes in the Mesorah, they believe in, Galju says, in religion, you read through the Nevi'im, you read through the Torah, you read through anything, they all speak about tshuva. HaTorah mafticha l'shevi pesha slicha. The Torah promises, how do you say this? L'shevi pesha? That's not an easily translated expression.
Yeah.
A refugee.
Yeah, a person who is sort of like a captive of sin, right? It promises slicha, chatot hayachid v'tzibur nimcham v'tshuva, meaning that I believe in tshuva, right? My Rebbe told me, the Navi told me, Yirmiyahu told me, everyone told me, the Torah tells me, Moshe says it, I believe it, I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to do it. Now, I guess the question, something I don't know what you mean, is why is this, I'm trying to think to myself, why is this on a higher level than the natural impulse? Okay, I believe I learned in yeshiva, and I believe in the Torah, I believe in the Nevi'im. Would your first impulse be that this is a higher level than something that's motivated sort of naturally by the religious spark? I don't know. Obviously, he feels that it is. Yeah, please, Zach, yeah. Right. Right. So what Dovid mentioned before is like the tshuva meyira, which is sort of like teva and out of fear and out of something, and this is much more like my brain tells me I believe in something, I believe in, okay, so I think that's definitely the shot, but again, something to think about. And let's just finish up this first parak, and then anybody have any more thoughts? So tshuva sichlit, how about the tshuva hasichlit, right? He ota shekvar rach shalom, again, this is not a great Hebrew sentence, et hativit famunit, that tshuva sichlit means that you've already, what did you say? I'll leave it to you to translate, right? It's already conquered, it already includes, it part and parcel of the tshuva sechlit is tivit ve'emunit. I mean, if all you have is the tshuva of the seichel, my brain tells me something, intellectually I believe in something, I know something, that's a very, how would you sort of describe that in a word? objective, dry, disconnected process of change. But if a person already believes in a Mesorah and there's a natural impulse, and then there's also clarity of mind, then that is a person who's putting together a full package of return to Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is based again on an impulse, on nature, on teva, on emunah, and then sort of the seichel encompasses all of that. Let's do one more line in this parak. Shekvar ba l'madrega yona. This is the highest level that includes all of this. Okay, asher lo raktsar gufani. It's not motivated only by the body. Oh, nefesh ruchani. The lo rak, hashpat ha-mesorah ba-kabbalah. It's not only based on the mesorah. Imi pachad onesh. It's not based only on sin. Oh, reshim kol davar chok mishpat. Haba mehen opinim nefesh. It's not based on any of that, right? So gor mehim of the tshuva. It's not only based on those things. Kim hakarab rura. This would be the line to underline. But a clear recognition, haba'a mehashkafat ha'olam v'chayim hashlema, that comes from a perspective on life, v'chayim shlema, the full chayim, full life, asher alto l'mala acharei asher tafkir ha'tivi, v'amuni kfar rashma b'yafad v'shmuzah, that elevates everything, once already sort of nature belief, sort of has run its course, or played into this already. So tshuva zu, haklula mehakadmot, this is like Orin Kates, which is, in the terminology of Rav Kook, this is like, what would Rav Goldberg say? Palei Palayim? You know, like, this is like for Rav Kook, the Orin Kates, a light that has no end to it. A sense of total inner simcha, inner light, a person that can integrate and combine nature, the natural spirit, emunah, together with seichel. That's the Orin Kates that Rav Kook describes. Okay.
Does that mean he has to go through stages?
Okay. So.
Or is that included?
So you're already being mechavein, or you know already the next parak, and we'll get to that in 1 second. Okay, yeah, David, and then we'll move on.
Jonah.
Right.
Okay,
David, so what you're saying, by the way, is something that bothered me, and I actually called Rabbi Moshe Weinberger, who wrote the book and wrote the tapes about this topic, and if you have a chance to listen to his shiurim on this, I don't profess to in any way be an expert in Rav Kook. There are people who here are, including Yosef Bronstein and Moshe Weinberger. But so that's my question. Is this describing tshuva me'ava, the person who has like clarity of thought? We usually think of tshuva me'ava being sort of this like overflow of love, of emotion, of even the way the Rambam describes like tshuva me'ava. And here, Rav Kook seems like he's describing tshuva me'ava. Everything has turned around in his life, but he's sort of explaining it as motivated by the seichel, right? So maybe hold on to that for a second, and maybe that will become more clear when we do parak base.
It's more about how you perceive reality. Like he sees this tshuva as this is real tshuva. This is like tshuva pasifos is this where it really is about.
Right.
Like, it's like you're not like Lahavi, like living in the matrix.
Right. No, true. But I would agree with David. If I ask you to define in a word tshuva me'ava, your first reaction probably would not be tshuva sichlis. It's intellectual. It's right now. Obviously, he's describing tshuva sichlis that encompasses tshuva tivit and tshuva emunit. But I think David's point is still well taken. Maybe that'll become more clear a little bit. Okay, let's move on to the next parak. And the next parak sort of makes a person almost clarify a little bit some of the issues that David just raised and could be raised at the end of parak aleph. Okay. A nice, you know, sometimes you open up some of the parak from Orei Teshuva, it's 15 pages, you don't understand a word of it, you get a little bit depressed. This is like a nice little two paragraphs, you feel, okay, I can do it. It's like if you learn Pacha Yitzchak, you know, like a two-page Pacha Yitzchak is just perfect. The 20 pages, we'll leave it for somebody else and go on from there. But, okay, so it says, L'gavi Meshach, no offense to Rav Huttner, but, you know, okay, I'm not smart enough. It's not a Rav Huttner, it's me. So okay, so parak base. So l'gabi meshach zmana. So the question is as far as how long the process of tshuva should take a person. Is it a
one year, 1 week, 5 years, 10 years, instantaneous? What's the goal of tshuva? Should it be sort of like this awakening? Should it be sort of methodical, so to speak? What exactly is the process? So, gabi meshach zmana, ha-tshuva mitchalek l'shnei chalakim. Tshuva pitomit, which of course means like sudden tshuva. V'tshuva ha-dargit. Dargit, of course, is, how do you best translate that? Incremental tshuva, right? So ha-pitomit ba'a mitoch eze barak ruchani ha-nichnas v'nishama. Now, this can only be written sometime in the 20th century, this type of language. You never find this language in the Rishonim, you never find this language. What does that mean? It's like a thunderbolt of ruchnius, doesn't sound right, but like a spiritual thunderbolt that enters into the neshama. B'pam achat makir hu etara v'etakiyor shalachet. In a moment, you recognize the raw, the evil, the kiyor. What's kiyor? The disgust or the ugliness, shalachet. V'nefach lishachar. In a moment, like your life is turned around, right? Ukvar margishu b'kirbo hishtanut gemura l'tova. And almost in a moment, like you recognize that you're a different person. Chuvzu ba yede eza hufa'a shall skulap nimit. Anybody want to translate that? If it's really hard, I ask you to translate instead of me. But what's that?
It's like a gift.
It's almost like a gift, right? It's almost like a moment, which maybe we'll discuss in a second, of like inspiration that comes like a skula. It's like a hufa'a. It's like an inspiration that comes to a person that really is almost like a generous gift that can only be explained as part of the unique relation we have with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Al yedei eza hashba'a nishmatit gedola. It comes when you have this great hashba of the soul. Sheroi l'chapes nitivadeha b'amkei taluma. And you want it sort of, what does that mean? It's appropriate that we can understand the nitivadeha b'amkei taluma, to understand sort of the hidden workings of the soul, of how this works. Right, there's a lot there. How does it work that all of a sudden we're inspired, we're new, we're changed? So he just says it's worth looking into it. I would just say the following, as a Rav of a shul, and maybe you've been to my house for Shabbos already, and you're all invited in the future, it's sort of a frustration, because I think everyone who's in this room, and I know a lot of you already, understands what Rav Kook means when he describes sort of like a moment of inspiration that feels like an influence of the soul that brings about change. And I think one of the hardest things for me in the rabbinate was realizing that many people speak a totally different language than Rav Kook. They would look at this and assume they understood it. They'd be like, oh, what are you talking about? Rabbi, what are you talking about? It's like, the soul's not active. The soul's not a major part of who you are. You're not a searcher. You're not a thinker. So Rav Kook speaks to certain people, but certain people would see this line of, you know, the influence of the hidden wonders of the soul, and you might as well be speaking the Chinese to them. It sometimes causes like an issue between parents and children, when children are different than their parents, and a child trying to explain his sort of spiritual aspirations to his parents, and his parents look at him like, you know, where did we go wrong with this kid? You know, go out and be an accountant. And okay, so there's a certain amount of sort of, you know, speaking past each other on some of these issues. How about Yeshua Tshuva Hadargit? This Tshuva, which is more incremental, Lo Brika Hivrika Bikirbo, it's not a thunderbolt, Lehitapech Min HaOmek Shaharam, in order to turn around the depths of sin that he was in, El Hatov, El Margishu, he feels, Shitzarch Liyot Holech Meitiv Darkov Archot Chayav. I feel I have to be better. I feel I have to correct my ways. Ritzono Halach Machshvotav, I have to change my desires, my thought patterns. Ubahalchazeh Holech Huvakovesh, La'at La'at. I conquer slowly, Adarche Hayosher, Metakin et Hamidot, Meitiv et Hamasim. The whole works. Melamed et Atzmo, Echlit Kasher, Yoter, Yoter. What's the keyword there? Malamed atzmo. It's like you teach yourself, right? It's not something that's natural, but you're teaching yourself ech lehitkasher, how to yoter v'yoter atchu balamalo ramashel zika fatikun. Out of curiosity, if you feel comfortable doing this, who usually finds themselves motivated by tshuva pitomit versus dargit? You sort of like can tell a lot about a person sometimes, so I'm not going to maybe ask for something too personal, but you know, there's obviously, depending on your nature, are you sort of a person that is organized and disciplined and somewhat, I wouldn't say yekish in nature, but you're like a disciplined person, that person's going to be drawn to something that's much, much more methodical, incremental. A person that perhaps is like a little bit all over the map, and he's up and he's down and he's super emotional, is going to maybe associate more with tshuva pitomit. And obviously both of them have their value. Now, without looking forward, if I ask you, what is a higher level of tshuva? Tshuva pitomit or tshuva dargit? what would you assume? And by keeping in mind a little bit, I think, Guy, what you said before, about thinking about long-term tshuva beyond that moment, right? What's going to be effective over a year, 10 years, 20 years? So what would you all assume?
Dargit,
right?
Every tshuva really contains all the good.
Right. Oh, that's for sure true. I mean, a healthy image is a person who's neither bloop, 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 and is neither also, wow, like in 1 second my life is different. But obviously, that's obviously the goal. We're speaking about sort of in general terms. Yeah, got it?
Some of the pitom can sort of like trigger the dargi, because sometimes like, you know,
right.
Like,
which is not what David meant, but it's also true. Sometimes one motivates the other. You know,
right.
The pitomit then motivates a sort of a life change over the course of many years. David, I don't think he meant that, but yeah. A little bit. Okay. Anyway, so take a look at what he says now, and you sort of have to figure out how to sort of be miyashev this paragraph with the last paragraph in the first paragraph. Hatshuva ha'yona ba'am mehavraka shel hatov haklali. And by the way, this is like Rav Kook as very much the mystic in what he's going to say a little bit in this paragraph. The tshuva that is really the highest level comes from the havraka, comes from the pitomit, the thunderbolt, right? Shel hatov ha'eloki hashora bolamot kulam. It comes from a thunderbolt of recognizing God's goodness, which exists in the entire world. Ur chay olamim, understanding God as the light of the entire world. Nishmat kol ha'atzilut matzirot lefneinu, the soul of allness and eminence, matzirot lefneinu, is clear in front of us, behoda b'kdushasa, in its glory and in its kedusha, in its holiness. Only as much as a person can sort of understand that or handle that. In a moment, there is a moment of clarity where you recognize. Anybody want to maybe define what he means? You recognize what? What is it that he's trying to describe? In a moment, you recognize, even from some of the ladies, what do you recognize in a moment? Sort of the oneness of all of humanity, the oneness of all creation, God's existence in everyone and in everything, the clarity of a purpose of life, the clarity of the of Akash Baruch Hu that's Shorah everywhere and in everyone and in everything. I had an experience, and this happens to me quite a bit, and probably maybe more in the Tshuva Pitomit category, that I was sitting on the Upper West Side maybe last year during the spring. I took off from, I guess, work. Don't tell Rabbi Penner that. And I went down, I took the subway down to the Upper West Side. It's one of those beautiful days in Upper West Side where you're sitting like on a park bench on the street drinking a coffee as people are sort of walking by. It's a beautiful day out. And it's one of those days where all of a sudden I felt myself starting to cry, because it always felt like that the beauty of the inner beauty of a person, the connections of humanity, the goodness of humanity, the beauty of the world, all sort of coalesced at that moment sitting on that bench. And it literally sort of, it was like this moment of such, I would say, like a mini, mini prophetic moment, this mini moment of elevation. And that's what he's describing. You know, he's describing a moment like that where all of a sudden your life is clear in front of you. And that is the highest level of tshuva. I even read one more line. V'echefshal liyot karu minakol. How can we sort of be torn apart from the rest of the world, the universe? Par mushunel, like a crumb that is like a little drop that is separate, etc., etc. So he says that shehi, the next line, shehi hakara eloki bemet. That understanding of the unity of everything, and you're a part of that. That is a recognition of God in truth. Ba'atshuva b'chayeha prat b'chaye klal. And that's true personally, and that's true nationally. That's the highest level. Now, I want to do the next parak, but anybody have a question on this last few lines, this last paragraph?
Is that really tshuva?
What's that?
He has an insight, a very deep insight, but that's not changed his life yet.
Right. Well, that is also true. Okay, what have you done? You know, you're sitting on a park bench, drinking a Starbucks, you know, understanding the connection of all the world.
Wonderful.
But I think that Rav Kook could probably say that in and of itself is like a redemptive moment. Tshuva isn't always about, okay, before I was learning X amount and I'm learning. I mean, like, tshuva can be sort of having like redemptive moments also of clarity, and I think that's probably a little bit, even maybe if nothing came afterwards. I think Rav Kook would probably still feel that moment is valuable in and of itself, but obviously it has to lead to something else afterwards also. Yeah, Ben, what were you saying?
I mean, that's what tshuva's sechlit is, that it's in the seichel.
Okay, that's exactly what I wanted you to say. In other words, we said before that tshuva's sechlit is the highest level, and now he's describing tshuva pitomit is the highest level. Now you would say, aren't those two things like at a crossroads of each other? You know, the intellectual tshuva contrasted with the immediate lightning bolt tshuva, and that's exactly the point. When Rav Kook describes, and David, this goes to your point before, tshuva sichlit in Perek Aleph, he's not describing sort of the dry intellectual change. He is describing a person of a clarity of who they are, of what their life has to be, of part of Klal Yisrael, part of the world, a clarity of godliness of the entire universe of himself, right? Tshuva sichlit is not dry. Tshuva sichlit is sort of the clarity to himself and the rest of the world. Now, it would be a crime. I don't know how many of you have a chance to learn Rukuk in the future. I would just tell you, because the Rosh Tshuva is so popular, it's been translated by a number of people. There's a translation by a Rav Metzger, who used to work in YU, or it's published through YU. There's a Ben Zion Boxer, who obviously you can tell by the name, lives in Israel, but he wrote that in English. There are a number of translations, and it's, you know, I encourage you over the course of your life to go through the Sefer. Okay, but again, it would be a crime to do this and not get the Perek Gimel, which at least for me, spoke to me in a way that I'm not sure any other specific Sefer person can speak to a person. Okay, we're going to try to go through as much as possible just in the next 12 minutes. I don't want to be insensitive to the next year. Okay, so yesh tshuva mechuvenet neged chet miyuchad o chataim rabim. There is a tshuva that is connected. I'm just going to read as much as I enjoy hearing what you have to say. There's a tshuva that is neged, is parallel to a specific chet, a chet miyuchad o chataim rabim, or maybe many sins. And that tshuva addresses a sin, many sins, etc. Va'adam sam cheto nochach panav. A person says, I can't believe I was fill in the blank, Michal Shabbos, umitcharet alav, and he regrets it, umitztar al asher nokesh v'fachachot hachet. This is a great line. He is upset about the fact that he became entrapped in the pachachet, in the trap of chet. The nafsho mitafes v'yola, and the person's like soul sort of size, and he changes until he finds that he's become freed from the avdus, from the slavery of sin. When I change from behavior X, I feel the cheirut hakedusha. What a beautiful expression, right? The freedom of sanctity, okay? Hane'imam ma'od l'nafsho hanahala, that is so pleasant to his downtrodden soul. V'hu holech u'mitrapei, and tshuva, you can go step by step and sort of be healed, so to speak. V'zahare ora, and the rays of light, shel shemesh ha-chesed, of the sun, of the chesed, which really is tshuva, chesed elyon, sholchem elav et kaveh, kavehem, sort of sent to him their rays, v'hu holech u'mitasher, a person goes and he's happy, holech u'mitmalei oneg v'deshem pnimi, he goes and he feels satisfied by the fact that he's been able to change, yachad im lev, I love this line because it's so insightful, yachad im lev nishbar v'nefesh shalcha meducha, he improves and grows and has kedusha, along with the feeling that his nefesh is still a little bit broken because of the mistakes that he's made. Shehu margish mikirbo, I still feel a little bit broken because I know what I'm capable of, and I know what I've done, and I know sort of the mistakes that I made. But listen to what he says. Shigam regish ze'atzmo, but even that feeling of being broken, hana'a lo lefi matzavo, in his current state, is almost like a pleasure to him. Right? Because, you know, there's something nice about feeling a little bit broken while also being on a good path in life, knowing that you're sort of a clean nishbar, knowing that you made mistakes. Even that feeling itself is a certain hana'a to him in that state. And I think you all know exactly what I mean by that. And so all of a sudden, I feel like, whoa! Like, you know, all of a sudden, like a person's on this great acid trip, but they forgot everything that came before that. That's not genuine. What genuine is sort of going through the struggles of change and still feeling the scars and the remnants of that change and that process. This is tshuva that is keneged a specific chet or chata'im. I address it, I respond to it, I move on from it, I feel the zare ora, the rays of light of kedusha, I grow each day, etc., etc. David, is it quick?
What I would say myself in terms of why it would have been pleasurable, the fact that at this point, at this, at, at this this stage where he just got the commandment of the embark on his journey to Tshuva. So the fact that he still has a sensitivity to recognize his past actions were something that made him in Klisheva.
Right. Absolutely. Now, by the way, I would just mention, though, you actually made me think about this now, what do you do with this sort of line of Cook in the context of like, the Rambam that describes a person who's an Ish Acher and he moves away from his past and he changes him, and, you know, Shinoi Shem. In other words, you know, there's sort of like a little bit of both of a person feeling like I'm a different person and I've changed my name, I'm not that person anymore. And, you know, what does the Rambam say? God can come and testify that I'll never do this ever again. You know, so with Rav Kook, that sort of feels like, no, it's important to still sort of have like the remnants of your brokenness a little bit as you move forward in life. It's sort of interesting to see like how the Rambam, if he does, how the Rambam would fit into that. Which he does not quote the Rambam, but it'd be interesting to note that. Okay, so I want to go to the next paragraph. So, and just you'll tell me maybe in a word what Rav Kook is describing. excuse me. V'yeshna od hargasha tshuva. There's another feeling. It's not kineged a specific chait, but it's tamit klalit. What does that mean? Doesn't really mean anything. But what do you think it means, Lynn? It's like this general, generic, overall feeling that he has in his life. Ein chet o chataim shel avar olim al libo. It's not like I'm sitting there thinking, I can't believe that, you know, I ate treif, or I can't believe that I yelled at my mother, I can't believe that I did all these things. It's not that, okay? Aval b'chlal hu margish b'kirbo, but he feels within himself, shehu miduche me'od, lowness, sadness, weakness, shehu malei avon, I feel the general sense of being filled with sin, shein or Hashem me'ir alav, ein ruach nediva b'kirbo. Everyone knows what this means? I've lost sort of the generous spirit that a person feels when they feel good about their life. I've lost that spirit. Libo atum, my heart is closed off, I'm not sensitive. Midotav utchunot nafsho, einan holacha b'derecha yishra v'otzuya. My personality traits, the stirrings of my soul, are not leading me in a derech yishra v'otzuya, in a desired road. Haruya l'meleyat chayim hagunim l'nefesh torah. I'm not being led in a direction that's going to fill my life with chayim. Hasich lato higasa. What does that mean? My brain, the way I think, my first intuition is gasa. What do we say, gasa?
Coarse, crude,
right? Like my impulse, my instincts, the way I think about the world. Rikshosav me'orvavim b'kederot v'tzimaon. My emotions, my regesh, are mixed in b'kederot and darkness v'tzimaon. Shema'orer lo ga'ol ruchani. I have like an inner disgust, an inner spiritual disgust of my life. Mitbayeshu me'atzmo. It's such an amazing expression. I'm like embarrassed about myself. Forget about anybody else. Like I can't look at myself. Okay. Yodeahu kiyein eloka bikirbo. I know that sort of God is not with me. Okay. And listen to this next line. This is a line to double underline. Vezot hi lo hatzara hayoter gidola hachet hayoter ayom. And that really is the greatest tsar, the greatest chet. The greatest chait was living in such a way that now he feels no connection to God. The chait wasn't A, B, C, D, and A, F, G. The chait was living a life in such a way that now you are barren of all spiritual feelings. Mitmarer hu al atzmo, he's so critical and harsh on himself, etc., etc. Okay, now I just want to see this next line, so you don't think that it's all... So how would you sort of describe this in a word, or in two words, this feeling?
It's like a lot of from people nowadays, like they couldn't be keeping halacha, you know, to the letter, but they feel a certain emptiness.
Absolutely. And really, what this really borders on, which I think all of us probably experienced in some time in our life, is like religious depression with a lowercase d. Not like a real depression, but a person just feels that they're so distant from God, distant from themselves, embarrassed themselves. It's like that, like malaise, like a mini depression that sets in. I just want to say this working, I guess, as a mashgiach here for a number of years. You know, I see guys often that deal with issues of like addiction, especially sort of sexual addiction. They're just disgusted with themselves. They feel they're nowhere, they're no one, they're nothing. They feel that they're the lowest form. And like, and that's this description. It's sort of this feeling of just this religious, spiritual, emotional, ethical malaise / depression. Now, how would a person sort of fix that? How do you address that? You know, if it's tshuva to a chait, so you know, you fix that chait and like you move forward. How do you sort of fix the religious malaise, religious depression? So what he says, you'll have to sort of read and reread a little bit. But if you go down a little bit,
So if you see the line that begins with Besad, okay, Besad is like that he's been imprisoned, right? So mitoch merirat nafshit zo, from this bitterness of the soul. So ba hatshuva, tshuva comes kiritia shorofe amen uman uman, right? The tshuva becomes like a bandage, a healing, a swab of a rofe uman, like of a great doctor. Hargashat hatshuva v'omek yediyatam. Somebody, a Kadosh Baruch Hu in this case, who understands tshuva, understands the depth of it. Smichuta hagdola v'omek hanefesh. B'seiter hateva v'chol chadre hatorah. Understands sort of the nature of the inner workings of a person. V'chol kocha hibav z'rema b'toch nafsho. With the entire strength, and here it's speaking about God, sort of comes and z'rema b'toch nafsho. What does that mean? It means that when a person feels that sense of being down, he can't really sort of pull himself out of it. You know, you sort of need like the burst of inspiration. You need the haftacha that Yom Kippur sort of is effective. You need to sort of feel the community. You need to feel your family. You need to feel sort of being pulled out of your state by religious sparks, and that's not what Rav Kook said, but by sort of the connections that people has around them, right? B'chol kocha hibav v'zerem b'toch nafsho, b'tachon oz b'rufua, his belief sort of strengthens, b'tchiyah kolelech, ha'tshuva moshit l'chol dveikin ba, ma'vir lov ruachem tachanunim. Over a period of time, slowly, a person sort of has a new spirit, the new chain of ruachem tachanunim that changes a person's entire outlook. Okay, there's really so much more that's even just in this paragraph. Really have to conclude. Again, the key point about Rav Kook in general, and especially in Orot HaTshuva, because a lot of his other svarim are more difficult, is that to find svarim, people, personalities that really speak to the essence of religious experience, he clearly does that. He speaks about the totality of man, whether it's Tshuva Tivit, Tshuva Emunit, Tshuva Sichlit, that speaks about the understanding of what a religious change can occur very suddenly through some real hakaras and through some real hargasha, who speaks about understanding what we've all gone through. Either individual chatayim that sort of makes us down and how we come out of that, or maybe even more so sort of the larger depression that comes from feeling disappointed in ourselves. And to me, when I sort of saw these writings, I felt like a landsman, you know, a kinsman, you know, someone that understands in his own life. And Rav Kook says at the beginning, he's writing this because he was thinking about it and he was experiencing it. And to know that you stand in shul with a family or people that are sort of going through the same thing and experiencing the same thing and sort of pulling each other out of sort of darker moments, I think it's very, very meaningful. People want in the future, maybe of course the year, some of the guys who are here, or the girls in Stern, if you want to organize a shiur, continue learning some of the works of Rav Kook, certainly be more than happy to do so. Thank you.